This is What's Your Poison? This is John Savage. Welcome. Please go to johnsavage.com for more info. Please subscribe on the platform that you're on. That's really important. Or leave a comment or ratings. That would be help me as well. We've got some merch coming, and that is it. Enjoy this episode. What I love about What's Your Poison is you never know what you're going to get. It's like a box of chocolates. That's because I'm spending too much time with comedians. The Robbie Collins, man, what a dude. I mean, not only a brilliant comedian, but I think this is a really special interview, and I think you're going to really love it. It's very deep. It's really got a lot of substance. We speak a lot about touring with Dave Chappelle. It's obviously an important part of his career. But it's actually, and there's some just amazing stories in there, so... yeah, you'll just love that. That's just pure entertainment. But the second half, we get really deep. We talk about his dyslexia. He's got arthritis. He deals with those things. How close, pain is for a comedian. How they use their punchline not to deal with the pain, but to entertain with the pain, and if that's good or bad. And really, what it's like being broke, even though you're on tour with Dave Chappelle, you still dirt broke. The science of comedy. And I think what I took the most out of this was Mommy Chappelle, Robbie's mom, and her sort of part in his career and supporting him, and some, and the wisdom, mom wisdom. I keep on thinking on all these podcasts, I should start a podcast called Mom Wisdom, because the moms just say and do really amazing things that shape these incredible careers. And I feel honored to be able to speak to guys like Robbie and hear these stories and get this insight. And I think you're going to really enjoy this episode. I absolutely loved it. So enough of me. Here is Robbie Collins on What's Your Poison. Robbie!
Hey, how you doing, bro?
Long time. How are you?
I'm good, and you, man? I'm so sorry about the delay.
It's absolutely no problem. Where are you now?
I am at my friend's place, and I'm chilling in this mess. He's staying in a complex, and it's pretty big, but his kids just arrived now, so I've come out to the yard. I'm in the garden right now.
Well, thank you for making the effort. I very, very much appreciate it. Excited to be chatting to you.
You're so welcome, dude. Thanks for having me.
I'm taking it due to your internet, lack of internet. You don't have any poison, or have you managed to sort something out for yourself?
I've got a glass of white wine.
White wine. Is that your drink of choice, or what? Or is it just that's what you could get in the time that I gave you?
No, so it's become my drink of choice. 2 years ago, 2020, when we were all on lockdown, I was getting severe pains in my hand. And I went to the doctor, and I found out that I have arthritis in my left hand.
What?
So the beer, bread, all of that shit, I've cut it out. So I've become a white wine drinker and a whiskey drinker.
So first of all, awesome about the whiskey drinking. Welcome. Is arthritis a hereditary thing? How bad is it? How have you got arthritis?
My mom's got it, and I know my grandfather had it.
Huh. Yeah. And how bad is it, and does it spread? I mean, I don't know anything about it.
Dude, I'm still reading up about it, but I just know that I used to have pains, and then they'd come and go. But I realized it came after, like, a lot of bread or night with lots of beer, and then I'd wake up with this pain. And then there wasn't any alcohol being sold during our lockdown in 2020. So I ate a lot of bread. I was at home, so I was making a lot of burgers and a lot of stuff like that. And I think I consumed a lot more bread that I'd ever consumed. And the pain just became like really bad. So that's when I went to the hospital and they did some x-rays and the doctor's like, oh shit, use the word riddled with arthritis.
Wow, so it's bad.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I don't have pain anymore. I'm good. Huh. The swelling's gone down, all these things. So I'm
well, fuck it. I'll drink to that.
Oh, you got your whiskey.
So cheers, I try to drink a different whiskey. I've actually never, I've never actually drank J&B before. I've like had so many different weird whiskeys on the show, but I, The J&B I bought for a friend and he doesn't like it, so I'm going to try it tonight.
There's a whiskey that I'm really trying to get. When I was on tour with Chappelle,
talk to me.
Chappelle had this Japanese whiskey backstage.
Was it Hibiki or Nikki?
Dude, I think that week of touring with Dave Chappelle, I didn't look at any labels. I was just saying yes to whatever was offered.
So I'll tell you, okay, well, we're going to get back to, even though the Dave Chappelle part is more important than the whiskey part, I'm just going to start with the whiskey plot. So
okay,
the Japanese
cool.
make...
But sorry, is my signal fine? Is my signal
perfect,
fine?
Perfect, 100%.
Okay,
cool. No, you're fine to me.
Okay, cool. Then that's fine. It's working.
So the Japanese make really great whiskeys, except they're crazy expensive. And I've got a friend who's a pilot who kind of smuggles them into the country, and sometimes I go to his house and drink them. But those fucking whiskeys from Japan are wicked. Okay, well, while we're there, talk to me about the motherfucking touring with Dave Chappelle. That is insane.
Dude, I don't even know. You know when Dream... put it this way. Opening for Dave Chappelle or touring with
Dave
Chappelle...
Okay, how did it happen? Start at the start.
So Dave is very tight with Trevor. And from the time I moved up to Johannesburg 2010, Trevor was doing Daywalker. And Trevor had seen me the year before when I used to come up on the bus to Johannesburg every month. I started 2008. And then Durban comedy scene was just really bad at the time. And it has its ups and downs even now. But at the time, like, you do a gig maybe, you do a gig maybe twice a month. And most of the times you'd probably walk home with $100. And Tsepo Mokgale, he came to Durban and he was like, yo, man, you got to come to Johannesburg. You're wasting your time here. And so I'll go up and there was a lot of talk about this guy, Trevor Noah. I had no idea who he was. At the time he was on Strictly Come Dancing, which is South Africa's version of Dancing with the Stars. But in South Africa, if you get onto Strictly Come Dancing, aka Dancing with the Stars, that is a good thing for your career. It's not like how you see it in the UK and the States. Where
it's not the tail end. It's the front end still.
for us, you get onto that thing, you're like, oh, shit, things are going well. So I had seen him on that, and I heard a lot about him through my grand, because my grand loved him, and he won that year. And my grand always spoke about this guy, but she had no idea he's a comedian. Anyway, I come to Johannesburg. I'm telling you the long story. I come to Johannesburg, walk on stage, I see Trevor. This guy comes through. This is the Trevor I've been hearing about. But he's in a suit. He's come from a corporate. That night, he dies on stage. He bombs. And I was like, oh, fuck. Why are we talking about
What's
this
What's all the
guy?
Fuss about?
Yeah, but I'm also new in the game. I'm doing maybe a year and 2 months. So I'm not really understanding the beauty of dying. The next night I see him do the same stuff, probably the same suit. And it was the most raucous show I've ever seen. Standing ovation. It was so crazy. And I was like, oh, shit. That's what it is. It was kind of cool to see so early in my career because, like, oh, dying is a process. Dying is exactly what it is.
Did he change the show between those 2 days, or was it the audience that was different, or just the magic in the air?
It's just the magic in the room. Like, I know that now, like, I'm going on 14 years of comedy, and I know those nights. I know those that can happen to me in one night. I come from a room, and it's terrible. And then you do the same shit, and it's like, yo, what just happened there? You know what I mean? Like, that's why with new jokes, you've got to give those new jokes at least 12 opportunities to shine. Because you could be off. The audience could be off. There's so many different things that play to making a great show and making a bad show. I think, so it was just a great lesson. And from there, we got cool. He was like, yo, this is dope. And we'd stay in touch. And then when he did his first one-man show, I came up and opened for him. And for years after that, I helped him like backstage, but I also opened for him as well. And when Dave came down in 2018, it was for the massive Global Citizens concert with Jay-Z and Beyonce came down. So Dave asked Trevor, he was like, yo, who do you recommend as an opening act? And Trevor was like, yo, you got to use this kid. And Yeah. That's to answer the question.
So crazy.
So that was the thing. And it was just wild. I'd met Dave the year before in New York at the Comedy Cellar. I was just chilling. And that night was crazy. Like Chris Rock had just jumped in. And then all of a sudden I see all the Roots. You know, the Questlove, everybody.
This is my all-time dream is to meet the Roots. That's my Dave Chappelle.
Dude. But you know what's crazy is like celebrities get excited when Dave is about to rock up at a club. Like it's not just the young comic from South Africa getting excited. Like everybody's coming through because they're going, what's going to happen? Dave.
That's
comes
how people
through.
Were like for Eddie Murphy as well. They're like, he was the celebrity.
Right, right. Yeah, everyone's got a crazy story about Eddie. And so Dave rocks up. And he's getting ready to do his 30th anniversary run at the Radio City Hall, which starts the next night. Myself and a couple other comedians had bought tickets for that because we had just come from the Just for Laughs Comedy Fest. Dave rocks up. We see Dave rock up. We're like, oh, shit, there's Dave Chappelle. And he's just walking around. He gets a drink from the bar. And then he rocks up at our table. And the first thing he says is, let me sit with the black table. We're like, what?
Hold on, is this before or after you'd open for him?
No, this is the year before. This is 2017.
Okay. You're still a fan.
No idea, he has no idea who I am. Nothing. So
he sits at the black table.
Dave is chilling at the table. So I message Trevor. I'm like, yo, Dave has rocked up to the cellar, man. So Trevor's like, I'm coming through now. He gets into his car, comes over. So it's like this whole table, Chappelle, Trevor, fuck, Rock, Questlove and the Roots hanging around.
Jeez.
It's one of those moments. But also I know this from like being around famous people. And Trevor told me this before. He's like, just don't pull out your phone. I know this moment is crazy.
You mean don't take a photo?
Don't like we took a photo at the end because a friend of ours, Will Savant, he asked Trevor, asked Dave if we could take a picture. But I just know from experience, just don't ask for a picture, none of that. Because,
be cool, bitch.
Yeah, be cool. Literally be cool. Said my wine just dropped on the grass. Fuck. And I was enjoying that.
You want to go refill? I'll hang on for you.
Okay, cool. Let me go refill. I'm coming back now. What do I do?
What are you on the Wi-Fi?
I'm using data now because I'm too far from the Wi-Fi.
We can walk and talk if you want.
Oh, that's cool. Let's do that.
Yeah. Okay. All these guys. So what is Questlove? Did you meet Questlove?
I met Quest, but it was he was also hi guys. So he's also like he had just come from filming the Tonight Show, so you could see. Guys looked a bit tired and everything. And I also realized after that they were coming from the Radio City Hall after rehearsing with Dave.
Which is next door. It's right next door to the club, right?
Yeah, it's not far at all. It's not like in New York terms, it's pretty close. You could walk if you wanted to.
Mm.
So they come through with Dave and everybody else. And it's just, okay, let me just do this quickly. Give me a second. How are you guys doing? That's good. There's little kids who are friends with my friend's kids. And they come here like every so often wanting to play with the kids. They're not here right now, my boy.
Some day drinking. You're just setting a good example for the kids.
Yeah. It's a Tuesday. Tuesday for a comedian could be New Year's Eve. So sorry about this, dude.
That's all good.
Wanted to give. Let me just sort this out. You can hear that.
I can see it as well. I've got quite a good angle. I quite like it.
Oh, snap. I'm going to take a little something out just to balance it because that's not going to happen again.
So you're at Trevor comes around, you've got all these legends sitting around the table and you're saying to yourself, don't take out your phone.
Yeah. That's exactly where it's at. Shivers told me, and just being around famous people, I've realized once the phone comes out, the coolness immediately evaporates.
Yeah.
Immediately, like there's no more trust in the room, and it's just kind of cold. So yeah. I'm seeing all of this happen, and they talking about the show. The room is packed now. The cell has gone from being practically empty to packed. People have heard. People in their comics are trying to get it, like, just get a sight of Dave. It's wild. And he goes on stage, and he does at least hour and a half off-the-cuff stuff. I'm not even downstairs. I can't even get in. So Trevor messages me, and he's like, yo, you can take my place. I've got to go home because he's shooting The Daily Show the next day. And it's pretty late now. It's at least, it's pretty much after 1 a.m. Dave's still on stage. And I go down, and I catch the last 20 minutes. By then, he's just freestyling. And there's a lot of silences, and then a big, like, applause, and like, people lose their mind. And then there's a lot of deep thought to it. And he's doing Dave. Like, I think he's just getting through what he has to do, trying to find the meat of the joke, but also still stick to what he's trying to.
You're seeing him explore. He's riffing and you're kind of watching him do jazz, right?
Pretty much. Like, I won't call it bombing, but I'm also. But it wasn't that pound for pound, like, punchline every 15 seconds, that kind of stuff. But it's deep, man. The homie's saying things. Cigarette after cigarette.
What are you, as a comic, taking in? What are you, in watching that, what are you ingesting for yourself?
It's a tough one, because you see, you trying to take in everything that's happening on stage. And as being a massive fan of Chappelle, it's that, but when you've watched a person so many times, you get to a point where you start studying it, where you're going, hey, look how he moves there. You know, this is a masterclass. Look, this is a person who's been doing comedy from the year I was born. You know, Dave started in 1987. It's nuts. So, like, you're watching the way he moves, and then I'm watching the audience as well, just to see, because he's not getting all those laughs or the stuff that I grew up watching him. Like, when you see a special, it's after 500 times being performed. But it's cool seeing the growth of it. I love that stuff. I'm a big fan of biographies where people tell me about how they made the album or how they got to a certain position. Like, the outcome of hard work is not as appealing to me anymore as the actual hard work and the journey of it, the process, and that, for me, like, the journey is so special, because you're just seeing everything happen in front of you, and I feel like the lessons are more there for me as a comedian, and also just watching other people's careers. So Dave eventually ends, and it's there, he's chilling, and then the night gets a bit crazy, and they leave. And I remember the first thing, I remember him saying goodbye to us. And then I remember him just pulling out $100 and giving a guy asking for money. And I was like, oh, shit, okay. I was like, this day.
Wow, that's also cool.
I think that was the cool part of it, where you're looking at your idol, but your idol's also looking at you with intrigue. How do I learn from these kids? These are young comics chilling in the comedy cellar. What's happening here? You know what I mean? And it's such a cool thing to just see the humility, but also it's so cool just to see the thing about a comic, like the thing Dave Chappelle is going through, the comic who's been doing it for a year is feeling those things. It's just on different levels. You know what I mean? It's on massively different levels, but it's also And also the talent might not be the same in the experience, but those emotions a comic is going through, you never, doesn't matter where you are, you're not exempt from it. That's why you always hear Eddie Murphy saying, like, I'm not going on stage because I know how much shit needs to happen before I can write Delirious again. All raw. Like, he's always stepped out. Like, I saw an interview of him where he says he goes to the comedy club and he'll watch it and go, nah, let me just go home. Because you know all the shit that's going through, bro. Like, as a comedian, you know those emotions that you're going to have to tackle and everything else. So it's real. It's very humbling because it's also cool to see, because you know that, and just seeing Dave on stage and like Chris Rock, you also go, I'm always going to be trying to find the better joke or the better me in the joke. That shit's not going to stop. Like, if these guys are still trying to figure it out and they've pretty much done everything, like, who am I? 14 years. What is that?
Fucking comedy exhausting, bro.
Sorry, bro.
So, okay. So so that was where you met, kind of half met him for the first time. Then a year goes by and you get a call from.
I get a call from Trevor. Yo, Dave. Dave says you can open for him. What? Okay, let's do it. Fly to Cape Town, meet up with Dave. Dave is
so you meet, because I'll tell you something. In the music world, like we when I, in the cassette days, I supported Pink. I mean, we supported some really big stars, but you don't get to meet them most of the time, except for the very rare exception. You're put in a different box. You go on stage, do your performance. You shuffle off, they shuffle on. If you get to meet them, it's fluke.
Right.
But you're saying you get there, you're in Dave's dressing room having a chat about what? Your set?
So this is the thing. Before I go on stage, I'm there very early. I'm there so early the sun is up. The show's at 8:30. But my call time was so early that the sun was still up. But right. I don't care. I actually want to see everything. Dave's manager, Cena, I see him talk to the staff because Dave locks up the phones. And he's like, yo, I think they gave the rules of no, and they write it down. And it's, South African audiences are awesome, but we don't have those strict rules that you hear about in the States or in the UK.
Sorry, what does lock up the phones mean? You have to leave your phone at the door.
Oh, no. So there's a pouch. They lock up your phone and you can keep your phone on you, but you can't use it. If you need it for any emergency or whatever, you have to leave the theater or arena, and then they unlock it, go make your call, and then you can come back in.
Is that a common thing, or is that a Dave Chappelle thing?
A lot of people have started doing it after he did it.
Wow, okay.
I think he's not a fan of the social media world at all. So I'm seeing this guy give the talk, and it's that thing of any heckling, there's no, unless Dave works with it and makes it part of the show, that person gets kicked out. There's no excuses, which is very cool, because like so many times with comedy, audiences will go, yeah, but I'm adding to the show. Like, you're not fucking adding to the show. You're being a nuisance. The comedian is experienced enough and funny enough to take your bullshit and turn it into comedy. But I promise you, you're not needed right now.
You're disrupting the actual show.
Yes. Yeah, you just found yourself speaking to a really good comedian, because I've also seen people do it, and they'll do it to a young comic or somebody who's not experienced, and then they'll find pride in that because they broke a comic. I'm like, yo, man, this person is coming out to make your day better. Why on earth would you ruin their day and make them feel shit where they can't even sleep because you and your buddy think you're funny? Like, what the fuck is this? Like, comedians, so many of us, and even as musicians, you love the thing. You do how many gigs for free just to get that one good paycheck? And so many comics, I know when a gig is free or when a comic isn't getting paid and they just want to do it because they love it and practice jokes. And then there's some person's like, yo, I'm gonna see how strong your self-esteem is tonight, buddy. So yeah, I saw that. I saw the sound check happen, and then the room starts getting full, and then Dave rocks up. And just before, I'm sharing the dressing room with Dave's DJ. Just before that, they're like, Dave wants to meet you before you go on. And then I try to remind him about the cellar, but I could see he's been at the cellar for so many years. It wasn't quite clicking. And then after the set, when I walked off stage, because I did 20, after the set.
How did you do, firstly?
Oh, man. Without being arrogant, I fucking killed that shit.
Yeah.
Like, I killed it. And there's a time I had doing 20 minutes, and I literally ended on 19 minutes, 55 seconds.
All right.
And that was it. And I was like, oh, shit, okay, cool. And he was there waiting to go on, and he's like, shit, that's funny. And then after that, when he ended, he was like, yo, dude, come to my dressing room. So that's when I started chilling in his dressing room. And then when we went to Joburg, then I was just chilling in his dressing room from the first shows. And it was just great. And just sharing all these things. And at the time, 2018, I was doing comedy for 10 years. And the whole time I'm just trying to not get advice forcefully, but I'm just trying to pick up any gems I can get from this person. And then the last night, he leans over to me. We're smoking something. And he goes, how long are you doing it for, kid? So I'm like, this is my 10th year. And he literally looks at me and goes, with his cigarette. You know, Dave talks with his cigarette. He goes, nah, it's going to make sense. And he leans back.
Beautiful.
That's the only bit of comedy advice he gave me. But he didn't need to say any more. I was like, okay.
I love that. It's weird. I was chatting to Kurt Skunrad on one of these shows the other day, and he also said, like, the 10-year mark was where it started making sense. Like, he didn't know what he was doing for 10 years. Then he was like, oh, wait a second. You know, I'm not just doing this. There's a whole other thing I got to unpack.
Totally. It's that. And you also realize that comedy grows when they grow.
Hmm.
You've got to live in order to talk to these people. It's like anything that happens. I guess Prince is the only person who kind of just made it work as an artist.
Yeah.
But where you can literally just disappear and not be around any normal civilians and still be dope.
Yeah, but Prince was that guy.
Yeah, Prince somehow made that shit work. Prince and Michael.
And do you think... So is Dave one of those people, or I mean, dumbass? Do you have Dave Chappelle's number in your phone? Could you call him or email him? Could you contact him if you wanted to?
I could call him now.
Oh, wowzer!
But that's a phone number for you to abuse.
No, and I'm sure you do. But what I'm getting at is it's a very specific type of person who's extremely generous to give the number out to the person who support, like the support artist, especially at the level that he's at, because he is Prince level when it comes to comedy, right?
Oh yeah, totally. Dave, it's such a crazy thing, because the thing that made Dave seem like he was crazy for, like, when people hear somebody walking away from $1 million, you crazy. 50 million, that's another thing. And it's more than 50 million with rights and all that stuff and masters to the work he produced. But that thing he did made him so powerful, man. Mm. Even with this latest show, like, how you cancel somebody who canceled himself? He told he told you to fuck off already. Like, so what are you going to tell him now? It's like, cool, you don't like me? Sweet. This is fine. I walked away for 12 years. Like, if you're not going to come to my show, cool. And as you can see, it seemed like his career has just gotten stronger, man.
Last Dave Chappelle question, then we can move on to you. I mean, we've only spent 30 minutes talking about Dave, but it was well worth it. Have you ever randomly texted him just about a thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
And did you get a response?
I got a response. I got a, also like when he drops, a special, not the, this last one, but there's another one where I was like, this, that was dope. I think his piece he did on George Floyd. And right. I was like, this is so great. I love what he had to say. And it was a, thank you so much. Or you'll, you know what I mean? But it's very, it's a number that you don't want to overuse.
No, I get
so,
it.
So it's, so in, with any questioning,
That's why I was asking the question, because you got to think carefully before you type that thing.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, like when also time zones and where's a person at, like you could be interrupting a person that's chilling with Oprah at the moment. And now there's some text message from Africa.
What's that?
Hey, Dave, what do you do after? Like, what? Like, what is
hey,
happening?
Dave, knock, knock.
Dave, what do you think of this joke? So it's one of those things where you just gotta respect it, but if needed, then yes. Even with Trevor, as tight as I am with Trevor, there's still a respect of I'm not gonna abuse this thing. I know that he's in a different
everybody wants
world.
A piece of Trevor, yeah.
Yeah, man, and I'm sure, like, I get from just my association with Trevor, professionally, I get messages from random people. Yo, can I book Trevor for this thing? It's a year-end function for this company. Like, yo, man, I literally tell them, I'm not even, I got to a point where I don't even tell Trevor about the inquiry.
Yeah, he doesn't, he's got his own entire world. He's got the rest of the world asking him already, right?
Yeah, and it's also like your little company in Port Elizabeth.
Yeah,
I can tell you now, you're not going to afford him. I
do,
know.
Do you think Trevor will come and do the Christmas party in Krugersdorp?
Yes. Yes. Do you mind if Trevor does the raffle at the end of our award show? What the fuck are you talking about?
We want to give him the keys to the city in Port Alfred.
Yeah, man, there's so many people. It's so weird how I guess comedians make people feel like they know us, but like how people will literally come
it's
up
true,
to
that.
Me randomly. But I guess that's what you got to do. You share so much of yourself to strangers, and you speak on behalf of so many people that they almost feel like you their guy, or you know. So people will come up to comedians in ways that I've never seen them come up to, like my rap friend, my friends that are rappers and famous, and they'll say some random shit, and you're like, okay, no, like, where is this coming from? What, like, it's cool, but like, it's almost like, what gives you the right to do that? And in the beginning, it was cool to, like, fans saying cool things and stuff, and then sometimes you also catch the people just like have no respect, and you gotta almost walk away, and it looks rude, especially if you start doing well in your career, because once is you stand up for yourself and go, I'm actually not taking any of this shit, then they go, you got attitude, like, nah, actually you're rude, and I'm with my family right now, and you're trying to tell me about something that I could do better on stage or whatever it is, or trying to badmouth another colleague of mine.
But like, I think you're right. You know, the thing that's in, you know, like actors, for example, they get cast as that one role that people have seen on TV. With artists, there's an enigmatic. They sort of come on stage, they do some magic, they waft off. Comedians come on, talk smack on the stage as if they're your buddy and tell you, your wife's this and your sister's that type of shit. So maybe the relationship is like the actor you saw on TV, the guy from Friends. You think that. You know, what's his name? Schwimmer is that guy. So if you see him on the street, you treat him like that guy instead right. of like a mega superstar actor in the world.
But you see, it's also the other thing of. So like
David Schwimmer. I don't know how I forgot that name. I went for the most obvious thing and forgot his name. Great.
If I say something about a person, say a TV personality, or I diss somebody in the audience or whatever, I have clearly calculated all the possibilities of what's going to come out of my mouth and how I'm going to make you feel.
But the craft of comedy is invisible. Like, this is the magic that you have is it looks like you walk on stage, talk some shit. You know the time and the crafting and the... But to the guy who's coming in who's being the heckler, there's no fucking idea. He just thinks, oh, this dude's coming in doing knock-knock jokes. I could do that. I've just chosen not to.
Right, totally.
Yeah.
And there's a gig I used to run with a couple of other comedians in Joburg CBD and called Kitcheners. And there'd always be new comics, brand new comics, never touched a mic before. And they'd walk on stage and they'd be like, yo, I want to do this thing because they've seen some special or whatever. And like I said, if you see a special on Netflix or whatever other channel, understand that the thing's been worked out over 100 times.
Yeah.
Before that,
a year. Yeah.
Easy. So you're confident because you're like, I can make those jokes. But what happens in the comedy club, whether it's Dave Chappelle or the guy who started a month ago, the comedy club's a different beast. So I remember this kid going, I want to jump on today. And I was like, just watch today and then we'll see next week. By the interval, he came to me and was like, don't worry about this shit. He had seen enough bombing to go, this is not what I saw on whatever you saw comedy on at home. You're like, this is not the thing. And it's comics, those comics were bad. They were just in a stage with that material of working it out and trying to figure out how it goes. And that kid, the process was too daunting for him.
I mean, yeah, it's the same thing. We plebs don't have a fucking clue. It looks so easy from there. I know this actually was, I went to school with Alan Committee.
Oh, sweet.
He did a sketch at school that I laughed my ass off on. And many years later, I went to drama. I did like drama classes and I did that sketch. And I had it in my mind for like 2 years. But when I actually got in, I had no idea. I didn't realize the amount of craft that had gone into his performance. I was like, that is so funny. I'm just going to read those lines and do it like this. And then it was a whole awakening for me to understand the depth of the craft of what you do. I couldn't touch it with a barge pole. It looked so easy, so far from it.
Right. And these jokes that I've put on ice for 6 years.
Literally, give me a joke you've had on ice for 6 years. I dare you.
Joke. My cousin attempted suicide, right? And I actually know a few people have attempted, have committed suicide. And it's a close thing. And I had a cousin who attempted suicide.
I'm just going to say, I'm sorry I asked now. I wish I hadn't said said.
No. It's all good. And the joke was that my cousin is no longer trusted at home because life is now difficult for him because he tried to commit suicide and he can't do anything because we just don't trust him with anything, like making tea for himself. And we're always like, no. So that was a joke. And I did it the first time and it worked. Next time I did it, bombs. So I'm like, what? But it worked. Do it again, bombs. Do it again, bombs. Do it again, bombs. And I do it 6 times. And I'm like, fuck, I don't know what's happening. I'm doing it exactly how I did it the first time. But it's just not working. I put it on ice. Years later, 6 years, I look at my comedy book and I'm like, oh, this joke. And I do it. But I realized I do it and it works. It works again and it just starts killing and becomes a favorite in my set. And I realized what was wrong was that I wasn't over it. I wasn't smiling when I was saying it. So the audience weren't being assholes. They're going, yo, you look like you're still dealing with this shit. You're not going to be laughing at your cousin who tried to kill himself. That's serious. You need to go deal with and process this shit before you come and tell us and try and make us laugh off it.
Wow.
Like a small
deep
thing,
shit.
But it's a big thing, and you go, oh, that makes all the sense. I was smiling and laughing and realizing that my cousin's fine now, and I can laugh about it. We can laugh. I can laugh about it with my cousin even before I tell the audience, and that made such a huge difference.
how do you then, and I'm not putting this on you, I'm just saying, like, I'm thinking about guys like Richard Pryor who just dealt with, was dealing with this shit on the stage. You know, he wasn't over, he was talking about the most personal shit ever, and he wasn't over, he was literally dealing with it as part of the show, no?
Pryor is king with that. When it comes to vulnerability, nobody touches Pryor.
Yeah.
And it's sad because when he gets sober, close to the end of his career and his life, the sad part is he becomes less funny. Like, people almost like the self-destructive Pryor. And that's the sad thing. Like, we hear so much about mental health today. And like, I don't... Pryor was kind of this... When I look back at it, and also growing older as a man, I go, this man was dealing with some serious shit. Yes, I laughed my ass off and still laughed my ass off to it. But I go, yo, I can only imagine what he was actually dealing with.
Mm.
Because comedy is a... The punchline can make us... The punchline to our pain, when you do it on stage, can make it seem like we are healing from it. But you're actually not healing from it. You're talking about your pain only to get to the punchline. You're not dealing with the pain.
Wowza.
You get what I'm saying? And then
I'm getting it. It's very heavy, this shit.
sorry.
No, I'm appreciating it. I'm just like having to digest it.
Yeah, so and that's a serious thing. And I think human beings, not just comedians, we all do that shit.
Hmm.
Where we kind of deal with the thing until you got a little bit of a smile on your face and you go, I'm good, I can hit the club. But you're actually not solving anything. Yeah.
I never thought of it. You know, I don't know if you're a Kanye West fan, but that one song, that one album he did, Yeezus, right?
Yes.
I mean, what I've always appreciated about that album was that it sounds to me like a very honest, a guy having a nervous breakdown in a studio and recording it.
Oh, yeah.
And I've always appreciated that, but hearing you, I'm like starting to recognize the pain, the pain of that. Like, that's an album that is out in the world, but that is actually the sound of someone losing his fucking mind.
So 100%. My sister was a doctor. She was like, every year around August, Kanye says and has like these weird public breakdowns. And I use the word weird because we see it as weird. And then you go, yo, this could be a imbalance or whatever he's going through mentally that's causing these outbreaks and him to react like this. But because Kanye's got this reputation now of that's just Kanye, and like, yo, how long are you going to go, that's just Kanye? And then until something serious happens, then you go, oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
You know what I mean? Like,
we've been, yeah. Yeah.
So it's like Pryor was all his fuck-ups and his shooting cars and speaking openly to hitting women or openly to doing drugs and all these things. That was cool, and people saw how amazing it was because of how honest he was. Because he wasn't trying to make it seem like it's a good thing. But until he tried to burn himself. And then people go, oh, fuck. Our homie is actually going through some shit. You know, like...
Maybe, and then he comes back and makes a joke about it.
Which is beautiful. But then you also go, man, it's a tough one. And I think comics and musicians alike, just artists in general. Last night I was watching a Basquiat documentary, Radiant Child. And you watch that and with all the beauty and this amazing art he made, there was a lot of shit going on there. A lot. Mm. And he's just one of the very many. So, yeah, pretty hectic.
Robbie, I don't know if you remember this. Many years ago, you did a radio show on my radio station, The Eye. Do you remember doing that? It was so fucking cool. It was one of the best shows we did.
What was the name of the show?
The name of the show was Songs I Listened To When I Was Suspended From School.
Yes. The lovely Catherine hooked me up with that.
Grenfell, yeah.
Yes.
That was such a fucking awesome show that you did, and really cool. You were telling all these stories about, like, figuring out what to do, how to get yourself back into school.
Yes. Yeah. I suffered dyslexia, right? And growing up, I didn't know that. You know, the school systems is a bitch in the sense that I think it might be changing now, I'm not too sure, but growing up, and I'm sure the same for you, you either fit into this world that we're trying to put you in, or you are fucked in life forever. If you don't excel here, you're done. They make you feel that shit from preschool, dude. Like,
right.
you don't want to nap when the other kids are napping. You got a fucking problem. It's like, yo, maybe I don't want to nap right now. Like, they literally, anything you go against in the smallest of ways is a problem. And having dyslexia, I only found this shit out when I was 18, 19.
Wow, late.
School was difficult. And when you weren't doing well in school with your schoolwork, you were immediately put into that bracket of a naughty child. So I found myself hanging around with the naughty kids, which ended up being amazing because it was like learning to make like hardcore dudes laugh was like one of the best skills, one of the best practicing for the comedy. Like,
is that where you were finding your comedy? Did you think at that time that comedy is where you wanted to go, or was it just you were just
from 13? But like, it would play in my mind because I knew I could make people laugh. But stand-up comedy was not an option in South Africa. Like, the stand-up comics that would land up on our TV were all like these old white dudes doing jokes that if you probably did today, you wouldn't have a career by the time you wake up, you know?
Listen, that goes for a lot of comedy just 5 years ago even.
Exactly. Let's not even go that far.
Yeah.
But so like, back then, saying you want to do stand-up comedy almost was like telling your parents on a stay out late to do drugs. It didn't sound like any comedy is happening. So going through school and my mom, who's a teacher, she retired 2 years ago. She realized that it's not so much that the reading was difficult, all these things. She was like, you're just reading shit that you don't like. So she gave me Eric Cantona books, Robin Williams, Jim Carrey. And as tough as reading was with dyslexia, because I love these people so much, I would force myself, figure out the word. What does that word mean? Go get the dictionary. Look it up in the dictionary.
Bro, oh, your mom's a genius.
So that got me into, hey, let me read. Reading's actually cool. It's just this, yo, you're making me read about fucking clouds and shit. I don't want to read about clouds. Columbus, whatever that shit is called. I don't want to know about those things. So
I want to know about Robin Williams.
So Robin, yeah, exactly. And like learning about those kind of things, that became the attraction for reading. And the more I read, the more I figured out all these people, like the Robin Williams, Jim Carrey, these guys all did stand-up. And I was like, oh, snap. And then the names, Richard Pryor would always pop up. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And I watched everyone. I even watched Chappelle before I watched Pryor.
What about Cosby?
Cosby's storytelling. Shit. Yeah. Yo, the story. So he didn't even used to sit on a stool. He used to sit on like a school chair, flat foot, and like just talk for 2 hours and have them losing their shit. Like some of the most beautiful storytelling. And that's why I think Cosby's story is so sad. Like, it's sad for the victims, but it's also sad because you go, this man did so much for the entertainment, black entertainment, whatever. And unfortunately, that's a legacy that can't even be mentioned now, which I totally understand. I won't give anyone a hard time for that. They have every right to go, hey, don't mention that guy. But, like, it is sad when all that beautiful work can't even be witnessed. Like, I don't know how many people's kids will ever hear of Bill Cosby.
That's true.
The Cosby Show is a flawless, timeless show of life lessons, family lessons, and it's beautifully written, great comedy, but it's one of those things you're like, hey, man, like, can we even use this? I don't know.
Yeah, interesting point. Shit. So, you, and do you how do you deal with dyslexia today? I mean, do you just learn? I don't actually know. How, as you grow older, does it get easier, or how do you make notes, read your notes, or what you struggle with, or was it just a?
It's a practice. So the more you read, the more you recognize words, the more it's easier to read. Like just looking at my screen now, and it's Robbie Collins on "What's Your Poison." When I first looked at it earlier, I thought it said "What's Your Person," and it just and what it simply is like my mind will move. I don't know if it's quickly or slowly, but my mind will go, that looks familiar to another word I know. So I'm going to fill in that other shit with nonsense that makes sense in my head. And then, like, I'm telling you, reading out in class, fuck, bro. I'd rather do brand new material in front of 5,000 people than read in front of anyone.
And what was Durban like? I mean, Durban must have been a tough place to come from to do comedy, of all things.
Durban was dope because growing up in Durban as a kid is great. The lifestyle, it's cheaper than Johannesburg. And it's also just people have time. No one in Durban's rushing, man. People have time to ask you how you're doing. People have time to visit you and all those things. And it's a blessing now being in Joburg for 12 years where you look back at it and you go, like the sound of kids playing on the road. I don't know if it's just where the change of times or it's where I'm staying, but there are always kids outside. There's a beautiful thing about having kids around. Like kids are immediately, they are immediate, what's the word? Kids know to ease a situation.
Right.
And everything. There's a thing about hearing a kid laugh or talking to a child. You can see like the most hardcore person talk to a kid and they'll somehow find themselves doing some silly shit or some silly voice because that kid has brought that out. And that's that. Kids are like, I read in Mandela's book, Long Walk to Freedom, he says the one thing they missed the most was the sound of kids.
What do you mean when he was on Robben Island?
When he was on Robben Island. Yeah. Like, he didn't bring up woman. He's like, the sound of children makes everything so much easier. The sound of children, and I think woman, that's why they say woman free before a certain time in a club. Because they know as soon as women disappear, you idiots are going to start being stupid.
And they're not wrong.
And they are not wrong at all, dude. And unfortunately, many men out there don't know how to deal when there's a woman out there as well in the way they speak to her and all that other stuff. But it's a woman's presence and a child's presence. I don't know what it is, but they immediately calm situations down. Immediately.
You must be feeling chuffed that live shows. How have you handled the last few years? And you've got shows coming up for once. Is that a big deal or is it?
It's a big deal, but it's also, you know, lockdown for all of us, I'm sure even for yourself, like there's finding yourself and realizing I need to deal with more stuff. I also realized I was really depressed. And that's the thing I was talking about. Like we talk about things to get to the punchline. We don't deal with the actual damn thing. And then going, oh shit, okay, I'm gonna talk about that thing more. I'm gonna go and see something.
Then I don't have to deal with it.
And in the first 2 months of lockdown was the most depressed. Yo, man, I've never felt that depressed in my life before. It was hard. And then one day you wake up and it clicks and go, hey man. Right now, I've got an opportunity to work on some shit. The world said, stop and work on yourself, Rob. let's do something. So I think that was important. But now the trick is, it's exciting that everything's opening. But now to maintain all that growth or that new lifestyle that you've learned while on lockdown and figure out, okay, what can I bring into this new world? Because when the world opens up again, like how it has, shit can become a lot more difficult to deal with just because there's so many things happening. That's all. There's so many things to deal with that it can make certain things a bit tougher.
Do you feel nervous about going on stage? I mean, you got a big show coming up now. Do you feel nervous about it? Or no, is that just standard nerves?
I get my nerves backstage like every on the day, like any day of performance. I'm actually thinking now if I'm going to go to the comedy club after this or not. But because I just started writing material like at 1 a.m. I was like, oh, hey, something just came to me and it got me flowing. So I want to work that out. But like the nerves are there, and then there's extreme nerves that happen just before. And it's weird. Like once you walk out and you just look at the audience, you're like, ah, I've been in this situation before.
Awesome. Okay, two more questions and then I will let you be, sir.
No problem.
This is my Oprah question, and then it's my finale question. So everything is rough and ready, and then I just ask these two questions. What would you say is the toughest thing you've had to overcome to turn you into the stand-up or person you are today?
Shit.
Yeah, I'll go deep just right at the end. I have to trick you, put a few drinks.
It's cool. I feel like I've given you a very deep interview right now.
Yeah, I like it. I'm loving it.
I think it was to be comfortable with the unknown and comfortable with the uncomfort. When I dropped out of school because I knew I wanted to do stand up. And so many of my friends they were getting cars because they got jobs and they were things were like they were getting the lives that the normal lives that you that this educational system teaches you to pursue. But at the same time, as much as your dreams can be big as fuck, but when you broke and you still staying at home with your moms and you don't even have money for cigarettes, that starts looking appealing, man. you start looking at that office job, be like, hey, you know what? Accountancy actually isn't that bad. And the best thing was having my family and friends who really believed in it and just going, nah, you fucking do this thing, bro. Like, you do this.
So was there a moment where you were like, you know, because you have to make the decision, I'm going to take this path, right? You can't just straddle the both options. Oh, I might do this, I might do that. Do you remember that moment, or you were just clear all along?
So, like I said, I dropped out of school. School just wasn't working out. My mom's single mother, five siblings. And I remember I went to school first day of 11th grade. On that day, and I remember being in there and just going, nah, I can't do this again. And it was, one, being school was difficult and I just didn't like it. I didn't like the part of the stuff they wanted me to learn. And the other thing was, I was like, I'm not wasting my mother's money knowing I'm not going to do any of this shit. I was literally, that was a big thing. I was like, I know exactly what I'm doing. I was already starting to write down like ideas for jokes. And I'd come to school and then I'd somehow get it into a conversation. Like people are talking about something and I'd lean it, like I'd ask you something that would find its way on the topic that I have a joke about. Next thing I'm making you crack up for 5 minutes and you're like, shit, this is crazy. I'm like, nah, prepared, motherfucker. You think this is just break time? But it's like, so I was already thinking like that. And when I made that decision, it felt so comfortable. Like, I remember telling friends of mine and family, and they were just like, yeah, that's exactly what it is, Rob. That's the shit.
Amazing. And then, what I was asking was that at that moment where you have been trying to get it off the ground, you know that's what you want to do, there's a paycheck to do something you hate. There's no paycheck to go in the direction that you want to go on. What keeps you on the path?
Believe me, I've had many a weeks, not even days, weeks where I've gone, shit, I'm gonna get a job. like where money's not coming in, and you go, fuck, man, I've done all these great things, even after opening for Chappelle, and then hey, I'm not getting these big gigs to make money. And where you go, fuck, am I making the right decision? Or not just that, where you go, question the comedy route you're taking and what you're saying on stage. Like, okay, I'm not saying safe stuff. Maybe if I said stuff that's more family friendly, I'd put myself in a better situation to make more money. All those things have played in my head, man.
Wowza. And so not only the job, the corporate comedian.
Yeah, you know, the corporate thing. My mom has no clue about stand-up. She watched a lot of stand-up when I got serious about it. Like, I'd watch from Sam Kinison to Seinfeld to Pryor to Chappelle to whatever, dude. I remember one day, a weekend, I got all the Def Jam comedy tapes, and I literally, a whole weekend, I watched it. And my poor mother's a very religious woman. She had motherfuckers from Friday to Sunday, dude. She just had motherfucker, bitch, for an entire weekend. And I remember her going, sure. but I was just like, okay, my boy wants to do something. I'm not going to get in the way of it. And I'm very grateful that she's been very understanding of that, because I know for parents, especially any parents, you want your child to have the best. And it's scary. There's no example. There wasn't a Trevor Noah when I started to go, hey, that you can make so much and get so far in comedy. Like I said, saying you wanted to be a comedian back then was literally like, hey, I'm going to stay out late and do drugs. that's what it sounded like. So that was a huge thing. That was a huge thing, but also like a huge blessing. And also now, once you know how it is in life, once you're out of a hardship, it's like, oh, cool, this is easy now. Yeah. And I got stuff to talk about. Now, actually, after all that shit I went through, now I've got 20 minutes to tell you about that you're going to probably relate to.
Dude, your mom sounds like an absolute, like an incredible person who shaped your career. You've brought her up a couple of times.
Oh, yeah. And I'm very close to her, man.
And also, bro, I just want to say I'm such a big fan of you and the work you've done, and also like fucking arthritis plus dyslexia. You're fucking Muhammad Ali, bro. Incredible.
Oh, thanks, bro. Thank you. I'm glad. I'm very grateful that the, and this is what I was trying to, I forgot it. This is what I was trying to tell you about my mom. I remember once being hella broke, and I called home. My mom's in Durban, and she goes, then what can you do to start making money in comedy? So I was like, yeah, I don't get corporates and all these stuff, the stuff. And then my mom's just like, she shut me down so quickly. She's like, yo, when you spoke to me about doing comedy, you spoke about the Apollo, you spoke about New York, you spoke about other stuff. Not once did you mention corporates. So she's like, why are you chasing a dream that you've never had? She's like, what are you... You're getting upset. And she said it to me. She's like, yo, if things get bad enough, just come back home. You're not going to die. You can still do comedy. And your room is still here. It's like, yo, but why are you getting upset for some shit you didn't want? I'm like, okay.
And bro, that literally gave
me fuel. And I was like, oh, there we go. And even when things are tough now, I go, oh, no. If I'm making people laugh and I'm being real to me, the audience and the people will come around. The ones that don't fuck with you, they'll eventually come your side, or they just never will, and that's fine. There's way more people out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Robbie, last question, then you can go. It's an easy one. Well, it's not actually an easy one. It's the last question is, can you recommend a guest for this? Like, now you get a vibe for what this is about. Someone whose story is phenomenal and needs to be heard.
There's a kid by the name of Long John. Long John, he's from Zimbabwe. He's literally just won a competition with Steve Harvey. He goes to live in New York, the States, for a year. I'm not too sure whereabouts. This kid would take a taxi. And when I say taxi, because anyone who's not from Africa, don't think of a yellow cab.
They don't know what a taxi is. Yeah.
Yes. This guy literally took a taxi once for 8 hours to an open spot.
Do you have a contact number for him?
I will send it to you. After this, and this guy, he's amazing, dude. Humble kid. He's tall. He's actually taller than me. If you see his height, you'll understand why they call him Long John. And he's hardworking, and things are working out for him really nicely. But his story is remarkable.
Mm, I appreciate that. Robbie, it's been such an honor. I appreciate your time so much. Thank you for coming on What's Your Poison?
Dude, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I really appreciate it. And cheers, my brother.
Cool.
All the best for the new year.
And to you, my man. I'll see you a lot in there.
Sweet, be watching bro. You.